The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Over the past 7 weeks, the Democrats' shutdown has inflicted massive harm. They caused 20,000 flights to be canceled or delayed. They departed so many times, so late. People were hurt so badly. Nobody's ever seen anything like this one. This was a no-brainer. This was an easy extension. But they didn't want to do it the easy way. They had to do it the hard way. And they look very bad, the Democrats do. They deprived more than 1 million government workers from their paychecks and cut off food stamp benefits for millions and millions more Americans in need. They caused tens of thousands of federal contractors and small businesses to go unpaid, and the total effect of the damage their antics caused will take weeks and probably months to really calculate accurately, including the serious harm that they did to our economy and to people and to families. So I just want to tell the American people, you should not forget this. When we come up to midterms and other things, don't forget what they've done to our country. I also want to call for a termination to the filibuster so that this can never happen again. So with all of that, I just want to tell you the country has never been in better shape. We went through this short-term disaster with the Democrats because they thought it would be good politically. And it's an honor now to sign this incredible bill and get our country working again. Thank you.
Never been better. The economy just get, we're out of the shutdown and life is good in the United States. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Lots and lots of content to get to on today's program. We appreciate Sam Livingston subbing in yesterday, giving me a chance to catch my breath. It's a busy time with school, with the programs, and everything else that goes on here at headquarters here in Edmond, Oklahoma. You can get to the live video stream of this show at the website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. So just for a bit of a truth bomb, not to rain on the parade, President, politically speaking, President Trump won the battle with Schumer and company. But when you step back and you look at the deficit spending, the printing of money, I mean, how long ago was it that President Trump and Elon Musk, I mean, they were best friends for life. They were coming in ready to cut away all the wasteful spending, the fraud. I mean, that relationship lasted for, it seems like, just a few weeks. What happened? What happened to all of those promises, to that focus coming in on the economy, on government spending? You don't really hear that discussed at all. This is from Jesse Waters' show last night, clip two.
I mean, this looks like a real cluster down in Washington. What was the point of all this, Vivek?
It's a good question to step back and ask rather than just going through the motions. I do think Republicans won this, and that's great. But the reality for the long run of the country, Jesse, is that we do have a national debt crisis that is loading up gradually over time. It's $38 trillion now. It's on track to be $50 trillion up to that number by 2030. And Republicans have done a good job of focusing on certain spending reforms. But the point of this is to make sure that the government operates within a budget.
How about that? How about that for a starting point? Let's operate within a budget. As he says there, okay, the Republicans won the political battle. But what about the debt? What about the long-term future for the United States? $38 trillion in debt now, $50 trillion by 2030? That's only 5 years away. Is that possible? You better believe it is. It is possible. for government, Republicans and Democrats alike, to spend like drunken sailors. Yep, the party's just going to go on forever. That's the thinking, really. You had one moment in time where Elon Musk said, look, we can't survive if we continue at this pace. And he came on board. He and his team, they were discovering all of this fraud, all of this wasteful spending. And yet the relationship, it just couldn't last. And we're back to the status quo. We're back to spending and spending and spending. I mean, even for, you know, either side to talk about the you know, how a government shutdown hurts so many people. Well, how many people does it hurt to just have this kind of reckless spending when everything's, you know, running just as normal? There's no shutdown, but we can continue to spend trillions and trillions of dollars. It's no wonder inflation is just skyrocketing, because we keep spending money, money we don't have, money that we just print. Monopoly money, basically. And then you wonder about the costs and why they continue. I mean, even the recent comment by the Trump administration about a 50-year mortgage. I mean, does that benefit the first-time homebuyer to have debt for 50 years instead of 30 years? I bought my first house when I was in my 20s on a 15-year loan. I mean, that's unheard of these days. Now 50 years? For 50, you buy your house. Let's say you're 30 years old and you buy your house. It's not paid off until you're 80. Is that the American dream? I mean, that surely benefits the banks. But does it benefit the first-time home buyer? Does it benefit homeowners? For so many in the, you know, the middle class, buying a house is how you accumulate your retirement, some bit of wealth. That's something that's long gone. That aspect of the American dream, it's pretty well dead and buried. So you look back, or look, you step back, you look at the big picture, and it's not pretty. And you can cheer and applaud for the end of a shutdown and for Chuck Schumer to be put in his place. But what about the long-term impact of what we've seen, particularly since COVID? I mean, COVID happened, and then the printing of money, it just, and there's no end. It wasn't dialed back at all. Following COVID, after the scaremongering, after all the fakery, after all of the alarmists were out there saying, yeah, we've got to do it. I mean, this is a world crisis. So we've got to spend an extra $2 trillion, $3 trillion. And then it dies down, and what do? Well, we keep spending an extra $2, $3, $4 trillion. $50 trillion in debt in just 5 years' time. I mean, where does it end? When does it start going down? That's what Elon Musk wanted to do coming in. He's like, we've got to curtail the spending. We're killing ourselves. We're committing suicide. And so it continues. And then you've got all these other manufactured crises or stories. Donald Trump wins the duel with the Democrats. And you've got, I think, 22,000 emails or documents released from the Epstein files, and the media hyperventilating over two or three emails that talk about Donald Trump, of course. Anything to divert your attention away from something that makes the Democrats look bad or look radical or extreme. Listen to this montage from, I think it's all from MSNBC, clip 7.
The House passed the Senate-approved funding deal, and President Trump signed off on it earlier tonight. But of course, the big news of today centered around Jeffrey Epstein and President Trump.
Failure feeds on failure. And just think about this past week. You, of course, have the Democrats' massive wins over Republicans last week, and the deeper Republicans dig into that, the more they tell me the news gets bleaker and bleaker. You look deep in those numbers in Virginia and the statewide races and the local races. If you look in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, if you look in New Jersey, terrible, terrible news. It's like Steve Bannon told me a week ago, right after the election. Gains Republicans made over the past 10 years, gone in a night. Mm-hmm. Republicans have basically lost six seats over the past week also in these redistricting wars between Gavin Newsom and what happened in Utah. So I believe it was AP that showed only one in three Americans, 33% of Americans, support the way Donald Trump is running the United States government. Shockingly low numbers. So you have all of this happening over the past week, and then yesterday, boom. As I said, failure feasts on failure. More revelations coming out on the Epstein case. And it is bad news for the White House and bad news for Republicans defending the White House.
This is indeed really bad for Republicans and the White House right now. First, backing up just a step to last week's elections. As we learn more and more about it, the breadth and depth of Democrats' victory, pretty stunning.
A bombshell, explosive, newly unearthed emails from Donald Trump's former friend. Those emails breathing new life into a question that has loomed over Donald Trump ever since the Justice Department tried to sweep the Epstein matter under the rug last summer. What is Donald Trump trying to hide and why?
More bombshells. Don't you get tired of the talking heads and their manufactured crises? Even as the world is burning, even as people suffer, even as the costs for living skyrocket, and there they are. And who sat on it, by the way? The Epstein files. Who was in the presidency last summer, Nicole? That would be the fake president. That would be the dear leader. All these years, they're sitting on the Epstein files. Pretty sure they would have revealed any evidence that made Donald Trump look bad. But now it comes out when Trump is, he's declaring victory. And people are celebrating. They're cheering. The Democrats didn't get anything out of the standoff over the shutdown. And so here comes Epstein. This is from The Federalist. It says, Democrats simply don't care about ties to Epstein. They never have. They only care that these allegations can be used to possibly harm Trump. For instance, the evidence tying Bill Clinton to Jeffrey Epstein is far stronger than that involving Donald Trump. And as Joel Hilliker wrote this morning, I mean, this latest batch, really, it makes the dear leader look bad. A lot worse. But don't go there. Don't worry about Clinton. Don't worry about Bill Gates. Just focus on the bad orange man. Orange Hitler. That's right. And don't get me wrong, there's plenty of evil and filth to go around. Yesterday I gave a lecture about what God sees when he refers to this world. I mean, there's so many scriptures that talk about the wickedness and the evil that fills the earth. And it's not like God says, well, it's just this little region, just Sodom is the problem. And if we can get rid of that problem, then everything's good. No, he says the whole world is deceived. He says the whole world is evil. He says the whole world is full of corruption. Read 1 John 5. I forget the verse. Verse 19, maybe. You look at the way people talk about this world. Like, it brings out here, they don't care about Epstein at all. They don't care about the criminals that got away with all of that pedophilia for decades. All they care about is targeting Trump. It's so predictable. So obvious. You want to look at the evidence? You want to actually look at the documents? Okay, what does it say? Well, let me just read what Mr. Hilliker had in the morning brief. Republicans and Democrats on the House Oversight Committee released different sets of documents relating to the late Jeffrey Epstein. So it's all politically driven. You know, the Democrats release certain documents and the Republicans release certain documents. They don't care. If they really cared about children or about these Epstein crimes, we would have seen them years ago. And, you know, President Trump even has wanted to, you know, put the kibosh on the files. Why not? Why not be transparent? Why not try to get to the bottom of this child sex trafficking problem? It says, in the meantime, the latest files shed light on the ties between Epstein, a monstrously prolific pedophile, and former President Barack Obama. Uh-oh. While leftist media has focused on and largely misrepresented content regarding President Trump. Just guilt by association. When it comes to Trump. But not Bill Gates, not Bill Clinton, not the dear, certainly not the dear leader. The files show that Epstein was often in touch with Katherine Rumler, White House counsel, to Obama. An email chain in September 2014. I mean, that's when Obama's still in power. He's still president. Epstein, you need to talk to the boss. Rumler, agreed, but I need to be prepared to say yes before I talk to him. Epstein, understood. It comes down to high risk, reward, low risk, reward, professionalism, emotional, and financial. And Mr. Hilliker says this came shortly after Rumler stopped working for the White House, but later in the conversation, she mentioned that the boss would be in New York for the UN General Assembly, which confirms that she was referring to Obama. Obama. What is he reaching out to Epstein for? What are they trying to connect in New York over? Epstein had dozens of meetings scheduled with Rumler from 2013 to 2017. Later on, it talks about how Rumler and Epstein agreed that Donald Trump is stupid. No love for Trump, but a lot of love for the dear leader. Oh, yes. Love for Obama. What was going on there, Scarborough? How about a morning meltdown? How about a bombshell about the dear leader? Instead, you've got an email exchange that says that Trump saw Epstein, and that's about it. And that's the big bombshell. Of course, the big story today is the Epstein revelations. This is switching back to the Federalist. It says here, similarly, LinkedIn's billionaire founder Reid Hoffman is a Democrat mega donor who was actively involved in funding the lawfare efforts against Trump and other deeply unethical efforts to help Democrats, including overt attempts to deploy Russian disinformation tactics in Senate races. Hoffman has been to Epstein's island and had close ties to Epstein years after his terrible behavior was public knowledge. I mean, this Federalist piece talks about how that there was a time, you know, 2006 or 7, where Trump and Epstein had a big falling out. And this was before Epstein was finally convicted of anything. If anything, Donald Trump was on to him. Donald Trump knew he was evil. And Donald Trump ended the relationship. But not so with Reid Hoffman or Clinton or Bill Gates. This is, as we've written about before in The Trumpet, I mean, it really does lift the lid on some sickening behavior from the ruling class, the elites. This is from a New York Times article. It says the Republicans also identified the victim whose name was redacted in the emails. I guess her name's Virginia Giuffre. She died by suicide last year or earlier this year. Giuffre had said that Maxwell recruited her into Epstein's sex ring while she was working at Mar-a-Lago, Mr. Trump's private club. In a 2016 deposition for a civil case, Giuffre was asked if she believed Trump had witnessed the sexual abuse of minors in Mr. Epstein's home. She says, "I don't think Donald Trump participated in anything." So there you go. I mean, from one of the victims. The case is shut. But not if you're listening to MSNBC. Because if you can get Trump, I mean, if you can lie to get Trump, that's perfectly acceptable. I mean, what the press can get away with in the name of free press or free journalism, free speech, it really is sick and appalling. And they've been getting away with crimes for so many years. Switching back to Mr. Hilliker's, well, we can play Jesse Waters' clip. This is clip 3.
Democrats are fighting harder for the Epstein files than they did to pay the troops. And the House just got their hands on about 20,000 Epstein emails. And what's the first thing Democrats did when they woke up? They leaked 3. Just 3. Out of 20,000. And it backfired.
Did the president ever spend hours at Jeffrey Epstein's house with a victim?
These emails prove absolutely nothing other than the fact that President Trump did nothing wrong. I think it's a question worth asking the Democrat Party, and you should all go ask them after this briefing, of why they chose to redact that name of a victim who has already publicly made statements about her relationship with Jeffrey Epstein is unfortunately no longer with us.
That's right. Democrats redacted a woman's name and called her victim, but the victim's dead. Her name is Virginia. And she already testified under oath that Trump did nothing wrong. What a sleazy leak while they're shutting down the government to give illegal aliens health care. They're all getting paid. They're all allowed to insider trade. These are the kinds of swampy tactics that make us lose all respect for these freaks. They create a crisis so no one gets paid. People can't eat and no one can fly. And now they're like, oh, here's a fake Epstein email. What a joke.
Sleazy leaks. We're used to those, though, aren't we? I mean, creating crises happens all the time. And then if there's a real crisis, you can be sure that they don't understand the significance of it. They just brush it aside. They walk right past it. This latest trumpet, by the way, when we come back, I want to get into the so-called religious revival. This issue, this is the December issue of the trumpet, and I think more than half of it concentrates on this so-called revival. I mean, you look at the sickening sins on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you hear and see more discussion on religion and church going and the Bible than ever before. But is it really reviving us spiritually? As I say, we'll look into that more when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
In October, you were asked about ending wars, and you talked about that, and you said, I don't think there's anything that's going to get me into heaven. I think I'm not maybe heaven bound. A lot of Christians were sort of sad to hear that, because Christ came to forgive our sins, if you believe that as Christians, and they open heaven to all of us. So don't you believe that?
So the other day, the New York Times did a story and took that statement totally literally. When I made that statement, I was being funny, sarcastic. You know, it's bad for a politician to be sarcastic. I said, I'm never going to make it to heaven. A big audience. I don't think I can make it. I don't think I qualify, you know, et cetera. I was kidding. I was having fun. I don't know if I will or not. I don't know.
That was President Trump talking about a joke, making a joke. And listen, humor has its place. We've got plenty of jokes on this show from time to time. But to just pick apart the thinking that is entrenched in traditional Christianity. I gave you the verse the other day from John 3, the Gospel of John. And John wrote this around 85, 90 AD, some 55, 60 years after the crucifixion. He spends a lot of his space or his writing in the Gospel of John talking about the Sabbath. We'll look into that here in a second. The Holy Days, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Last Great Day, the Passover. And it says in John 3 and verse 13, no man has ascended up to heaven, but he that comes down from heaven, even the Son of Man, which is in heaven. Only Jesus ascended to heaven after his resurrection from the dead. No man. Outside of that, I mean, I'll just take what John says. You know, and we can make a joke or laugh about it, I suppose, but the simple fact, according to the Bible, is that when you die, you don't go to heaven. So we can answer that. For those that wonder, well, I don't know if I'm going to heaven or not. Well, you're not. There you go. It's John 3 and verse 13. This is Ben Shapiro on a podcast recently, clip 4.
If you could offer one remedy to heal a sick culture, it could be physically, emotionally, or spiritually. What would that remedy be?
Go to church. Go to church. I say this as a Jew. Go to church.
Why do you say that as a Jew?
Because this is a Christian country. I want Jews to go to synagogue, but there ain't that many of us. So if you're a Christian, or if you grew up in a Christian household, even if you didn't, go to church. Church is good for you. I've said that my entire career. Charlie said it his entire career. It ain't going to stop now.
Wow, even when he's interviewed, he talks 1,000 miles a second. He's a sharp thinker. There's no getting around that. And his view is that everybody should go to church, even as a practicing Jew. Just go to a Christian church. I think it was Charlie Kirk's widow that said, just go to a Bible-believing church. In fact, we've got an article in this issue of The Trumpet that goes by that title, I believe. Let me see if I can find it. Join a Bible-believing church. That's right there on page 11. Join, and it's got a picture of Mrs. Kirk. Join a Bible-believing church. A lot of people are saying this. Even Ben Shapiro, a Jew, is saying, just go to some kind of a church. And that'll solve a lot of our problems. But is that enough? Which church should you go to? And if you go to church, just because you show up, does that mean you're a true Christian? Does that mean you're a believer? Does that mean you're following Christ's steps? This is from the Morning Brief. Mr. Hilliker says, claims of America's religious resurgence are undermined by a new Gallup poll showing that religion is less important to Americans than ever. What? It's less important to Americans than ever. Americans who say religion is an important part of their daily lives has dropped 17 percentage points since 2015. That's a 17% drop in 10 years. And so for all the talk, Here again, look at the fruits. Look at the actions or lack thereof. James said, if you hear but don't do, you're deceiving yourself. And then you think about God's assessment of this world. Revelation 12:9, as I say, the whole world is deceived. Let me read you this verse I mentioned in the first segment. This is 1 John 5 and verse 19. John is trying to ward off apostasy. You can read about Diotrephes in his third epistle, a dissident. He was a fake minister. He was deceiving people in the church. And John was seeing God's people fall away from the truth. He was seeing them be deceived by fake religion. And then he says this in 1 John 5 and verse 19, and we know that we are of God, and the whole world lies in wickedness. The whole world? I mean, this was his assessment in the first century, 2,000 years ago. And it squares with what Paul said in Galatians 1:4, the evil world. And with what John wrote in Revelation 12 and verse 9. The whole world is deceived. Let me give you another one from Revelation 13. Verse 3, it says, and I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wandered after the beast. This beast power, we've got literature that talks about these prophecies. But again, just notice, verse 4, it says, and they worshiped the dragon, that would be the devil, which gave power to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is likened to the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. I mean, it talks in here how he's deceiving nations, entire nations. That's brought out in Revelation 20 as well. Let me just read a verse from there. Revelation 20 and verse 3, it says, and he cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal upon him. This is when God finally puts the devil away, that he should deceive the nations no more. I mean, is it really possible that an entire nation can be deceived? Well, I mean, look at these numbers from Gallup. Yeah, the interest or the impact of religion, it's just declining precipitously. In the last 10 years, religion doesn't really have an impact on people's lives. Not like those who are out there talking about it nonstop. Just go to church. Just find a church. Listen to this from Fox News, clip 5.
Well, faith-based songs seeing a boost thanks in part to social media. The Wall Street Journal writing that Christian music is everywhere now, whether you realize it or not. A new generation is widening the audience for faith-based songs through digital savvy and an eclectic sound. Let me just show you a statistics, a little tick up, but it's significant in the world of music. In 2023, 1.7% of Christian music on the charts. Now, in 2025 so far, up to 2%. But aside from that number, do you feel it in your own interactions with people and while you're out on tour, for example, like you're in Chicago tonight?
Yes, I do, Dana. I think never before have I felt such a seriousness about spirituality, but I feel a seriousness right now across the country that I don't think I've ever felt in my lifetime.
So I don't want to poke fun at people's intentions. They're sincere, so many of them. But Christian music is everywhere. So that means we're holy and righteous, I guess. Listen to one more clip, clip 6.
And is that, for example, where the songwriting capital in Nashville, do you see a difference there too?
Absolutely. I think people are hungry and thirsty, what scripture says, hungry and thirsty for righteousness. I think, you know, there's a French philosopher, Pascal, that says in every human there's a God-shaped hole. And I think people are hungry to fill that God-shaped hole, and they try to fill it with all kinds of different things, you know, whether it's relationships, success, addictions. But at the end of the day, that fulfillment can only come from God, in my opinion.
Well, and that is bearing out amongst people attending church. Let me show you a couple of statistics here. Gen Z is leading a resurgence in church attendance with attending 23 out of 52 Sundays a year, millennials at 22. And then you also have this chart here in terms of weekly Bible reading. If you take a look at this chart in the bottom left, you'll see that Gen Z and millennials are really ramping up the Bible reading as well. What do you put that down to? And does it have a little bit to do with this technological revolution that we're in and people so much on their phones and maybe even worried about what AI can bring?
I honestly, Dana, think it's, you know, a post-pandemic issue. I think we have lived in such a filtered and fake, you know, community for so long that people are really wanting something real.
It's interesting that one of the proofs put forward for the resurgence is that Gen Z is attending church 23 Sundays out of 52, almost 50%. Almost half the year, they're going to church. And this is seen as a good thing. 23 out of 52. Is that what God, does God suggest that? I mean, what about what he commands? This series of articles, the one my father wrote, one of the strongest ones we've put in the Trumpet, America at the Crossroads. I'll give you some quotes in a second, but here it says Christians should keep the Sabbath. That's on page 4. And then on page 10, is Charlie Kirk in heaven? That's across the page from Join a Bible Believing Church. It's a great issue. I told the students to read and study this issue yesterday. Answers a lot of important questions. But with Christian music everywhere. After all, it's 2%. It's gone up from 1.7% in popularity to 2%. It's everywhere. People really want to be religious. They're hungering and thirsting. This is what we're told. I'm just listening to the commentary. But if you want to get the truth, make sure you subscribe to the Trumpet magazine. Ask for this November-December issue. The 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. You know, we've been blessed with almost 100 years of righteous leadership in God's church, starting with Herbert Armstrong, continuing with my father these past 35-plus years. And, you know, you go back to Mr. Armstrong, I cannot imagine him ever getting up behind the podium and addressing the congregation and saying, listen, as far as Sabbath observance is concerned, I want you to aim for 23 Sabbaths a year. Just try to get almost 50% in your attendance. You notice what Paul says, just brings to mind Hebrews 10. Let me just read that for you. Hebrews 10, and I think it's verse 23 or 4. It says, let us hold fast. This is verse 23. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, and let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works. And then verse 25 says, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is. Some were forsaking these opportunities to assemble together. It says, but exhorting one another, and so much more, it says, as you see the day approaching. You read the next few verses after that, and I mean, it's a pretty sobering warning. Don't compromise with this one bit. You stay faithful. In fact, as you see the return of Christ approaching, you be that much more zealous to attend, to assemble together, to hear the instruction at God's teacher's college, to fellowship often one with another. This is what the Bible says. It commands it, in fact. My father writes in this issue of the Trumpet, He says more and more people are looking for answers after Charlie Kirk's murder. Millions of Americans are asking important questions. Some even seek to repent of what has led to these awful curses. There's an article in this issue about true repentance as well. Very important issue of the trumpet. It says here, they sincerely want the sickness at the heart of America's, or at the heart of America, healed. Some have turned to the Bible for answers. Many are flocking to churches for guidance. It says, America is at a crossroads. Our next steps will determine where this religious resurgence leads. Will it lead the nation to God, or will we remain in wretched sins that have caused our massive problems? See, again, you've got to, just like I said with the economy in the first segment, you've got to step back and look at the bigger picture. Is it leading the nation to God? This revival, this resurgence, this talk about religion. Let me read to you another passage I read in class recently. This is in Romans 1. Romans chapter 1. And we'll see what the problem is with religion in so many corners, with education, with our society. Again, you look at God's assessment of this world, and he says it's filled with wickedness. It's filled with corruption. Here we are, Romans 1. And look at verse 25 or so to begin with. Romans chapter 1, verse 25 says, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshiped and served the creation more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. It talks about some of the vile sins, sex sins between women, men, it says in verse 26, verse 27. And then verse 28 says, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind, or a worthless mind, a rejected mind, to do those things which are not convenient. The margin in the King James, it says, a mind void of judgment. There's just no judgment. There's no wisdom. It's just human reasoning, even in religion. I mean, John 3 and verse 13, it says it all as far as whether or not so-and-so's in heaven. Just read it and believe it. Believe the truth of the Bible. If you don't retain God in your knowledge, well, you're just going to have human reasoning running out of control. And that's what we see in the world today. My father writes in this latest trumpet, he says, God has a warning against the religious people of our day. It's not enough to reject transgenderism and other societal evils. God is telling us there's something terribly wrong with our religion. Continue reading through Romans 1, and you see all the sins that we're getting involved in. And if not directly involved, you know, people just give their nod of approval to it. They go along with it. Paul brings that out at the end of Romans 1. And then you get to Romans 3, again, just to come back to the point about God's assessment of our world. It says here, as it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. This is Romans 3 in verse 10. And Paul here, he's quoting from the Psalms. He's quoting from Isaiah the prophet. He's quoting from the Old Testament. He believed. He understood the evil of his day and how that it was just all around. I mean, in Rome, in Corinth, in Ephesus, he talked about idol worship in Ephesus. He talked about bringing in sex sins in Corinth, even into the church. And he said, we've got to get it out. God doesn't have this, you know, hey, if you can keep the commandment 45% of the time, then everything's good. There's a resurgence. Now, we all sin. We all trip up. We all make mistakes. But you know how it is. If you have this mediocre standard, well, look at sports. I mean, you're not going to aim to be the best if you're just kind of satisfied with being mediocre. Spiritually speaking, I mean, Paul and others talk about this being our profession, our vocation. This is what we have to be exceptional at. living as Jesus Christ lived, following the example of Jesus Christ. Christ set for us a perfect example. He didn't sin. He was tempted in all points, like as we are, Hebrews 4, yet without sin. He didn't compromise once. Can you even imagine Jesus Christ saying, you know what, as far as the Sabbath command goes, just try to keep it 45% of the time. Of course he didn't say that. It's a command. The Ten Commandments, they're commands. They're not suggestions. You can't just get in there and manipulate it or massage it into something that you want for it to be, to make it easier, to make you feel, you know, better about yourself. There is none righteous, no, not one. There's none that understands. There's none that seeks after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good. No, not one. He goes on and talks about how we don't know the way to peace. Isaiah 59, verse 8. You hear that on this show all the time. And yet, as I've said, you see how confident the peacemakers are. There's it's just like this, the commentary about the religious revival. It's so wonderful. It's all around us. I mean, the Christian music, it's everywhere. Is it? And even if it is it true Christian music or worship or obedience to God's commandments and laws? Christians should, this is in the latest Trumpet magazine, Christians should keep the Sabbath. Well, that's pretty straightforward. That's not like, well, it's optional. You decide, you choose. Well, Sabbath, Sunday, either day's fine. No, God's much more specific and emphatic than that. And human beings don't like that. And so we try to read into it, or we try to come up with exceptions. And join a Bible-believing church. Joel Hilliker writes, again, this is in the latest Trumpet, the churches were bursting with visitors on September 14. In some places, there were lines just to get in the doors, and attendance exceeded that of Christmas or Easter. Why? Because 4 days earlier, Charlie Kirk had been murdered. Americans saw a man killed because he had spoken out for family, responsibility, and tradition, not merely as conservative values, but as binding biblical principles. He stood up for what he believed. And people across America thought, I should be like that. As I say, there's some sincere intentions here to straighten up, to read the Bible, as Charlie suggested, to have a weekly Sabbath. He was a Sabbath keeper. Stop in the name of God. That's his book coming out, I think, this month. Charlie Kirk's final book before he was assassinated. Keep or observe the Sabbath. Well, if you look at our booklet, Which Day is the Christian Sabbath? I mean, this is something Herbert Armstrong wrote decades ago. And we fought for it throughout the 6 years of litigation, the fight for Mystery of the Ages. And this was part of the fight. And we make this booklet available to you at no cost or obligation. My father wrote an article back in 2019. He says, how can a day be made holy? The first book of the Bible tells us. It says that on the sixth day of creation, God made man. But the creation didn't stop there. And on the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day. This is quoting Genesis 2. He rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day, and God sanctified it. That's Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3. I mean, that's important. God rested. God blessed it. God sanctified it. It's of God. It's not of man. My father says there is a double miracle here. God sanctified the seventh day, which means he set it apart for holy use for all time, forever. But this also says God blessed the seventh day. God pours all kinds of blessings into that day. The seventh day is a truly blessed day. It's a wonderful blessing, God's Sabbath. And it was refreshing to hear. We've played them on this show, to hear those clips from Charlie Kirk talking about how observing the Sabbath and just shutting off the distractions, the gadgets, helped his marriage, strengthened his family relationships. It was a blessing to do that. And it is. He was right. Listen to this from Mr. Armstrong. This is from, I believe, a message he gave back in the 1950s, clip 9.
Now, at creation, it was Jesus Christ who rested on that day, and he made the Sabbath. And 4,000 years later, he was made flesh and dwelt among us, and he came as a human being. And we read that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Now, 4,000 years before that of creation, he rested on that day and made that day by rest. Did he change? No. We find that when the Sabbath came, as his custom was, he went into the synagogue and stood up for to read. Jesus kept the Sabbath. Brethren, today, the only hope you have of any salvation is Christ in you. He is a living Savior, and he saves you from the inside and not from the outside. And so we must be able to say, as Paul, the apostle, did, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life I now live, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Now, if you can't say that, you're none of his. Unless you are letting Jesus and his mind actually dwell in you, and live your life for you, and your mind is so surrendered to his that it is his way, his mind, actually living in you, you are not a Christian. I don't care how many churches you belong to. Now, if Jesus Christ is the same today as he was 1900 years ago, and he was the same then as 4,000 years ago, will he in you still keep the Sabbath today, or will he be keeping Sunday? Now, which? And I showed you the other night, you last night, you can't keep Sunday, you can't keep ice water hot. Now it was made. Christ made it. It was made for man, not against man. It was made for man. It was not made for the Jew. It was made for man. Now if it was made for man, when was it made? It was made when man was made.
Genesis 1 and 2. It takes you right back to the beginning of the book. God created it, and he didn't change it 4,000 years in. It wasn't created for just Jews. The Jews didn't exist at the time of Genesis 2. That didn't come along until, what was it, thousands of years later, through the tribe of Judah. God made it from the beginning. God rested himself. God made it holy. That article my father wrote, he says, Sunday is the first day of the week. This is not the day God blessed and sanctified. God's divine holy presence is in the seventh day. That is not true of any other day of the week. The day God made holy is the seventh day Sabbath. In that article, as I say, this is from March 2019, the Trumpet Magazine. You can also get to that booklet, Which Day is the Christian Sabbath, I mentioned a moment ago. To delve into this study, next time perhaps I can play a clip from Mr. Armstrong where he talks about the challenge that his wife made way back at the start of his conversion. And it centered that six-month night and day study into the Bible. It's centered around that challenge regarding God's Sabbath. Well, that's all I have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.